Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Please be advised that this episode contains disturbing and graphic scenes of torture. Parental discretion is advised. Welcome to Unexplained Extra with me, Richard McLean Smith, where for the weeks in between episodes we look at stories and ideas that for one reason or other didn't make it into the previous show. In last week's episode, The Devil's Kiss, we ventured out into the depths of the Lancashire countryside in the northwest of England to the sprawling country estate of Clewerth Hall during an especially turbulent period of British history. It was there that in 1597, seven individuals were said to have become possessed by demonic spirits, with the blame for their ailment being firmly placed at the feet of a man named Edmund Hartley, a local conjurer who was accused of inviting the devil into the bodies of the afflicted. Ostensibly, Hartley's crime was the practice of maleficium, an act of witchcraft performed with the intention of causing damage or injury. However, to the courts, and by extension the ruling powers of the time, Hartley's real crime was not so much that he'd endangered or harmed anyone, but simply that he'd supposedly entered into a covenant with the devil in order to do so. This act, argued the court, was a deliberate rejection of Christianity, and more specifically for the time, Protestantism, thereby establishing Hartley as a heretic. Notions of witchcraft and sorcery had been around for millennia. However, it wasn't really until Heinrich Kramer's 1486 book, Malleus Maleficarum, meaning in English, The Hammer of Witches, that a framework was suggested for how its practice pertained to Christianity. Though it was rejected by a number of Christian scholars at the time, Kramer's book essentially established the idea that witchcraft was almost always committed with help from the devil and was therefore an inherently heretical act. This book was adopted with great fervour by many European powers and contributed hugely to the brutal persecution of perceived witchcraft that would sweep the continent over the next three centuries. This persecution of supposed witches, therefore, was very much a political act, encouraged as a way to promote Christianity and the authority of the Church, which at the time was one of the key frameworks in which the ruling powers operated and asserted control. To be a witch, essentially, was to be someone operating outside the desired status quo. Despite the overtly political connotations of this assault on perceived witchcraft, and those arbitrarily deemed witches, most of whom were women, for reasons we'll get far deeper into on a later episode, I should stress that for most Europeans at the time, the fear of the power of witches was very much real. Such beliefs in illusory threats are never more dangerous than when held by individuals who can also wield significant power. For the British Isles, there was one individual more than most whose fear of witchcraft during the 16th and 17th centuries is thought to have almost single-handedly contributed to the torture and death of thousands of innocent people. And it all began one stormy night back in 1589. In September 1589, Princess Anne of Denmark departed Copenhagen on board a ship bound for Scotland, when soon after her vessel was hit by severe and unexpected storms. Unable to continue, the fleet was forced to take shelter on the south coast of Norway, from where the Queen and her entourage eventually made their way to Oslo to hold up. The princess had recently been married by proxy to King James VI of Scotland, and had been due to arrive there that month to formally complete their union. Alarmed by news of the princess's troubles, King James promptly set sail for Denmark, but was also forced back by furious storms. It wasn't until October 22nd, almost a month later, that he was finally able to depart, arriving in Oslo in mid-November. Unsure about risking an immediate return journey, the couple decided to complete their marriage in Oslo instead, where they remained for a few months before attempting the return journey to Scotland in April the following year. No sooner had they set sail, however, they were once again hammered by a mighty tempest that seemed to rise up from nowhere, forcing them back to Norway. 2 weeks later, they finally made it to Scotland. With Anne formally crowned in May, the couple soon settled into their new life together at Holyrood Palace in Edinburgh. Back in Denmark, however, strange things were beginning to stir. After the embarrassment of the initial failed trip to Scotland, the Admiral of the Fleet, Peder Munch, accused the Minister of Finance, Christoph Valkendorf, of failing to provide him with a ship suitably equipped for the weather. Eager to absolve himself of responsibility, Valkendorf quickly set about trying to build a case as to why he couldn't possibly be to blame, and soon alighted on the perfect explanation. Clearly, he argued, it had all been the fault of witches with Catholic sympathies, desperate to disrupt the union between Anne and the Protestant King James. He knew this because one of the witches involved had told him. In early May 1590, Anna Coldings had been arrested for witchcraft and was languishing in a Copenhagen prison, awaiting her execution. Valkendorf suggested to the mayor of Copenhagen that he quiz her too about any possible involvement with disrupting the princess's fleet, and after some not-so-gentle persuasion, Coldings finally admitted to it, saying that she and some other women gathered at the home of fellow witch Karen Weaver, where together they cast a spell on Anne and James's ships. The spell, she said, had released a series of tiny demons from out of barrels on board the vessels, who then climbed up the rigging and concocted a storm above their very heads. Colding's additional confession did nothing to alter her plight, and in July, she was burned at the stake. In September, two of those she named in her confession to Valkendorf were also burned alive. A few weeks later, the news arrived in Scotland. In November 1590, David Seaton, the deputy bailiff of Tranent, a town about 10 miles to the east of Edinburgh, began hearing unusual stories about his servant, Gillis Duncan. It was said that she often used magical charms to cure friends and family if they became sick. After spying on her one night, Seaton witnessed her taking a late-night stroll alone, which he considered deeply suspicious. Convinced she'd been communing with the devil, Seaton confronted her about it a few days later, and when she denied it, he had her arrested. One morning, Duncan was wrenched out of her cell and rigorously stripped, whereby a mark was found on the front of her throat that Seaton claimed was the mark of the devil. Duncan was then placed in a chair and asked again if she'd ever communed with Satan. When she once again insisted that she hadn't, the tips of her fingers were placed one by one into an iron vise and crushed repeatedly. But still, she would not confess. Then a rope was placed around her head and pulled taut, with her head then wrenched back and forth in excruciating twists. Duncan finally confessed. It was all true, she said. All her cures and workings had been done with the help of the devil. Despite her confession, Duncan spent the next 3 months being repeatedly tortured for her apparent crimes, during which time, most likely in the hope of a reprieve, she accused 8 other individuals of practicing witchcraft. Believing he now had a witch epidemic on his hands, Deputy Bailiff Seaton had all of the accused arrested and thrown in jail with Duncan. With King James already alarmed by the stories filtering through from Denmark regarding the apparent witch plot to sink his and Anne's fleet, when news broke of the arrested witches only 10 miles from his home, he began to wonder if they might also be involved. He started by calling for Agnes Sampson, the oldest of the accused. Sampson was brought to the royal court and asked directly by James if she was a witch. Sampson denied it, however, and was promptly thrown back into jail. Soon after, all Sampson's body hair was unceremoniously shaved off, after which the devil's mark was said to have been found on her genitals. She was then fastened to the wall of her cell by a witch's bridle, an iron headpiece comprised of 4 sharp prongs that were forced into her mouth, 2 pressing against her cheeks and 2 against her tongue, then kept awake for days on end. After prolonged sessions of head-wrenching and the thumbscrew, she too eventually confessed and confirmed all the others as witches as well. And they had all participated in an effort to murder the king. Next, James called for Agnes Thompson. Unlike Agnes Sampson and Gillis Duncan, Agnes Thompson wasted no time in offering her confession. It was back on All Hallows' Eve of the previous year that she and 200 other witches from all across the local area gathered by the ocean at North Berwick, a coastal town 20 miles to the east of Edinburgh. There, the witches had danced and sang all night, drinking gallons and gallons of wine, before all flying off together in large sieves to the Kirk of North Berwick, where the devil was waiting for them. As they continued to dance and sing, with Gillis Duncan leading the procession, playing a Jew's harp, the devil beckoned them inside, where he then lay down over the pulpit, with his backside in the air. One by one, the witches took it in turns to kiss the devil on the buttocks as a sign of devotion, as he loudly declared to them all that King James VI was the greatest enemy he ever had and must be stopped at all costs. On the orders of the devil, Thompson said she tried at first to assassinate the king with the venom of a black toad, but failed in her efforts. Then, having heard he was en route from Denmark, she called for her witch companions to join her at the port town of Leith, where the king's fleet were heading. Taking pieces of a dead man, she tied them to a cat and flung them into the sea as her compatriots chanted spells into the wind, whereupon a violent tempest was cast out across the waters, so devastating it even sunk a nearby ship that was carrying jewels for the king. Satisfied with her account, the king had Thompson thrown back in jail. Intrigued that only one man was said to have taken part among the 200 witches, James then called for him to be brought to the palace. The man was John Cunningham, a local schoolmaster from nearby Preston Pans. When Cunningham refused to confess, they called for the boot, an instrument constructed of 4 pieces of wood, crudely nailed together, which was then placed tightly around his leg. A wedge of wood was then placed between the boards and hammered repeatedly, crushing the leg inside until Cunningham could not take any more, and he too confessed. Yes, it was all true, he said. He had also danced and sang with the devil in North Berwick, and was even tasked with the responsibility for recording the oaths of all the other witches who'd participated that night. Cunningham was thrown back in jail, where he renounced his ways, vowing to be a good Christian from that day forward. A few weeks later, he managed to escape and flee back to Preston Pans. His break for freedom was short-lived, however, and it was a decision he would soon come to regret. After being found in Preston Pans and rearrested, Cunningham was brought back to the king. Convinced that he'd used his time away to commune with Satan, James asked him once more to confess, but Cunningham refused. "Very well," said the king. After being put back in his cell, Cunningham was visited once again by the king's torturers. First, his nails were crushed and split apart before being wrenched off one by one with pincers, but he would not confess. Next, under what was left of each nail, two needles were thrust into his fingers up to their heads. But still he would not confess. And so, once again, they called for the boot. With the contraption in place and a wedge jammed between the boards, the hammer was brought down. Cunningham screamed in agony. Then again, the hammer came down, and Cunningham screamed once more, but still he would not confess. The wedge was hammered so many times, it is written that the bones and flesh were so crushed that the blood and marrow spouted forth in great abundance, whereby his legs were made unserviceable forever. Despite issuing no confession, Cunningham was convicted of treason and witchcraft, and in January 1591, was placed in a cart and strangled, as required by law for the crime of treason, before being thrown onto a fire at Castle Hill in Edinburgh, the required punishment for practicing witchcraft. Over 100 women were investigated for their supposed involvement in the apparent plot to sink King James's ship, and though it isn't known exactly how many were executed as a result, Agnes Sampson was burned at the stake, and most likely Gillis Duncan too. In 1597, having been utterly convinced of the danger of witches at what became known as the North Berwick Trials, King James published his now infamous dissertation, Demonology. In it, the king outlined his understanding of the history and practice of witchcraft, as well as his reasons as to why the persecution of witches was entirely justified in a Christian society. In what many believe to be a direct consequence of King James's obsession with witches, over the next 80-odd years, a series of witch panics gripped Scotland, England and Wales, with as many as 3,500, mostly women, estimated to have been killed as a result. If you enjoy Unexplained and would like to help support us, you can now do so via Patreon. To receive access to ad-free episodes, just go to patreon.com/unexplainedpod to sign up. Or if you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can go to unexplainedpodcast.com/support. All donations, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Unexplained, the book and audiobook, featuring 10 stories that have never before been covered on the show, is now available to buy worldwide. You can purchase through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Waterstones, among other bookstores. All elements of Unexplained, including the show's music, are produced by me, Richard McLean Smith. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and feel free to get in touch with any thoughts or ideas regarding the stories you've heard on the show. Perhaps you have an explanation of your own you'd like to share. You can reach us online at unexplainedpodcast.com or Twitter at unexplainedpod, and Facebook at facebook.com/ Unexplained podcast.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tail.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.